You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com. You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Welcome to the Brews and Appraisal Views podcast, where we blend the art of appraising with a touch of insight and a dash of humor. Whether you're a trainee, a seasoned professional, or just curious about the appraisal world, you've come to the right place. So grab your favorite brew, relax, and join us for some expert tips, real-world stories, and valuable advice to help grow your appraisal business. I'm your host, Dan Lindemann, certified appraiser serving South Florida for over 20 years. Hey, welcome back, appraisers. Thanks for joining us for this episode. Today, we're going to talk with Karen Johnson. She's a commercial and residential realtor with Keller Williams. She has been named the 2022 Realtor of the Year by the Broward, Palm Beaches, and St. Lucie's Realtors, which is the third largest association in the country. She's known for a hands-on approach. Karen is with her clients from start to finish. She's got a lot of hustle, a lot of heart. Whether it's luxury properties, investments, commercial properties, first-time home buyers, she brings deep knowledge and genuine care to every one of her deals. Since 2017, she's consistently ranked in the top 0.05% of agents nationwide and was the top producing agent in her office, closing over $25 million annually. I've had the privilege to work with Karen on several pre-listing appraisals, and I can tell you she's one of them agents who's the real deal, the top, you know, the top 0.05% is totally accurate. She's very active with her board of realtors, and she is currently one of the NAR liaisons, which has oversight of appraisals. So that's kind of what we wanted to talk about today, appraisers and agents interacting. So thanks, Karen. Thanks for being on. Can you tell us a little bit about your background, how you got involved in real estate, you know, what, and especially the NAR as well?
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me. My name is Karen Johnson, and I used to be an underwriter for 25 years prior to this life. So I love appraisers. I to speak the language. I understand how to be prepared. We are working together. I know that I'm supposed to be prepared, and everyone should be prepared, because my job is to justify what the price is. And I bring support for that. And that's because of it's all about numbers, right? And that is the difference. Sometimes you have conflicts and et cetera, and relationships with appraisers who don't really necessarily have the best, reputation when it comes to realtors, mortgage people, et cetera. However, you have a job to do, and it's a very well-respected job. It is very difficult to do. And first, I have to say, your training is outstanding. The amount of knowledge and depth that you have to become an appraiser is outstanding. And this is not my NAR hat or my real estate hat. This is me as a realtor speaking. I wish 90% of the people in my field was as trained as you guys are in your field in order to represent the public. So I will start with that. I started in real estate in 2010, actually. I was a processor and underwriter. I managed a commercial division, moved from New York to Florida, managed five states. I was with Washington Mutual. I underwrote multifamily, $5 to $50 million portfolios all over the country. I traveled a lot, loved my job. I have a bachelor's, I have a master's in finance. I loved my job. And obviously, as all of us know, the crisis happened in 2008. And I was 6 months pregnant with my first child and had to lay off 67 people and give back the keys to our office. Lehman was our funder, and I had to create myself. Most of my employees, I fought actually to get packages for them. And I went back and did my master's not for a job, but for myself. I needed to get a grip. My husband said, hey, you should do real estate. You have the personality. I mean, in college and for many years, I waitressed and bartended. So I am an oddity. They called me because I like numbers. I like people also. So it's an oddity because I actually work them well together. My husband said, oh, you should get your real estate license. I was like, me, a realtor? I hate them. They make so much money. They don't do anything, right? And that was the perception. And that is the public perception sometimes of it until I said, I am not going to be that realtor. I left making high six-figure salary. I got hired by another lender as well, a local bank. And I had no joy in what I was doing. I was foreclosing, taking back people's properties, commercial properties. And it just was not, the work ethic wasn't there. I moved from New York to Florida. So I remember the first time I had a hurricane and I went to work the next day and the office was closed. And people said, well, why are you in the office? And they said, because the hurricane was yesterday and we have power here. We don't have power at home and we have work to do, right? So, but it's something that's really important is to actually get involved. So when I started real estate, education, I think, is extremely important. And I knew the lending side of the business, but I didn't know the real estate side of the business, the actual sales. So I actually, my local board, Brow Palm Beaches and St. Lucie Realtors, at the time it was Fort Lauderdale Board, I started to go to classes.
And any that class is so important possible. You did that because when you're getting into the industry, especially the beaches, that board, they constantly spam you with education, which is good for new agents, you know, getting on. So the fact that you went to go volunteer there, that mm-hmm. should be every agent's first step is take every single course that that board offers to get familiarize yourself with the industry. That is so, so important.
And I live in Parkland, so we're like away from where the main area is. So I went to a sub office and basically went to classes. And what happened was the staff said to me, hey, you know what? You're pretty smart. You do commercial and residential. We have an opening in the commercial committee for someone. Would you like to do this? And I went to Leadership Academy class because I wanted to know everything there was to know about how it is to network with other realtors, to learn what's going on. And that's how it really started. I was the president of the commercial division for the board in 2017. And then a big merger happened and in 2018, where we became the third largest. And at that point, we interviewed, we had 42,000 members, so have 42,000 members. At that time, it was probably mid-30s. I interviewed and my position was for a treasurer. And because of my financial background, I got the treasurer position. And then I did all the steps. I didn't try to skip something because I think it's important. But doing that also, I think it's really important because sometimes you see these volunteer leaders who volunteer, but they don't actually do work. Sure. Or they're brokers.
You just want the accolades for doing nothing.
Right. So you manage people or you manage a brokerage, but I'm actually in the field every day. So I actually take pride. I'm still on the Beaches MLS board of directors because when we make changes and when we make changes in fields and when they're trying to do things, I actually use this 10 times a day. I use RPR 5 times a day. I use IMAP 5 times a day. So I think it's really important to be a practitioner, to be able to. And also you can help other agents. I would say half of my time is spent volunteering, but half of that time also is mentoring other agents. I get calls, hey, I have a scenario. Hey, can you help me with this?
So much from mentoring other agents, I bet. You know, learning all the different scenarios and you having to teach it is, you know, really, really important for you to learn as well personally.
And I also get a lot of, oh, I just got my license and I want to do a commercial deal. And I said,
super dangerous. Super, super dangerous.
I was like, it's not something. Well, can you teach me everything? I said, listen, every deal is very different, right? Every property type is very different. You're looking at a multifamily versus a retail versus a warehouse. You know, I said, listen, if you want to partner in a deal, I can partner in a deal anytime. And you step out of the way, let me negotiate because you don't know anything about column distance, ceiling heights, you know, parking ratios, etc., cities, etc. So my advice is also if you want to learn, there's a lot of opportunity to learn. Go take a basic leasing, commercial leasing class. Go take a basic contract class. And then a lot of people In fact, I am the commercial realtor for residential agents. I'm not here to steal your clients. You can kiss and hug them. I will run the numbers. I do both. I live in an area where I'm probably one of the newer residences in the communities that I lived in, and fought with the city, well, not the city, the builders, back on issues, etc., and got very involved in that. I'm very passionate about it. I understand it and the price point that we are, and who's better to sell my community. So it's a very rare, I wouldn't encourage people to do both unless you had formal training in both. Right. So it's a little bit about it.
So what does the liaison over appraisals? What do they talk about? What do they do? What can you give us insight on?
So basically there is NAR, there is Florida Realtors, and then there's your local board. So being involved in your local board, you get opportunities. I was the chair of the commercial committee for Florida Realtors investments and several others. I was on the finance committee for NAR. It's very difficult to get on some of these committees, especially finance. But I was recommended and I've been on it for 5 years. National Association the Realtors. And last year during the big court hearing and payments, I was actually vice chair of investments, overlooking that as well, with some very brilliant, intimidating.
A t-shirt and jeans, mac and cheese, oceans and sunsets. Some things in life are an obvious match, like RIAs and Schwab Advisor Services, the number one choice for independent advisors looking for a custodian who can help them go further. With all the wealth services, technology, and support an RIA firm needs, the difference is so obvious, it's Schwabious. Find your match and learn why custody is just the beginning at Schwabious.com.
Minds of people all over the country who are past presidents of states.
Right, and that's meeting an interesting people. Time to be a part of that is when Absolutely. That settlement happened, because a lot of states weren't doing what other states were doing with the buyers. So a lot of states were... always did that, but half the states did not, you know?
Absolutely. So I guess what NAR is they have synergy, and they teach that to the state, especially the smaller states, that because Florida has 240,000 agents, like realtors in our, so we're the largest in the country after California. Before California, sorry. They were always neck and neck, and so basically bringing synergy throughout the country. So it's very important, as you guys are, to make things unified. So the president, Kevin Sears, has an opportunity to choose, I believe it's like 8 or 10 of us throughout the country that he chooses as liaisons. So it's the president, the incoming president, and two vice presidents. Then it has the liaisons below them. So basically I call myself like a disciple. We spread the word from below the message. We have the filter in between. So
way to play into the Easter theme this weekend. That's good.
Right. Exactly. It's Good Friday, you know, everything. So basically our voice is to bring the message and gives the support that these committees need. I have about 10 committees, commercial committee, investment, residential investment properties, second homes, appraisals. So I sit in on these committees and I speak to the chairs and vice chairs to give them the support that they need. Legislative support, if there is something that we need to bring in, because the most important thing about this volunteer stuff is the impact we make on the communities. And people don't realize this. It's not a title. It's actually going to Tallahassee. It's actually going to DC, to the Capitol, and talking about 1031 exchange and talking about mortgage tax relief, etc., like that. All these. So we're a big political voice. This here is my RPAC pin, and I'm double Hall of Fame this year. And that means I gave my own money that's not tax deductible to the fight, to the cause, because you know what, things like not having our commissions taxed, things like making sure affordability is happening, rent control, all of those things we play. So my job is to understand, because I usually say I have all the stepchildren, right? So the commercial people feel their stepchildren, the appraisers feel their stepchildren, but they're not, because it's about membership also, but bringing value to the membership, but most importantly, bringing value to the consumer. So being able to be a part, the appraisal groups are, they have several other networks, and we work together across the country, so we have unified information.
So with on those committees, what do you talk about regarding the appraisals? Like bridging the gap somehow or pushing agendas?
It's a mixture of so many different things. It depends because we meet twice in person per year. We meet at legislative meetings. It's going to be early June this year, and then we meet in November. We have monthly meetings as well. So what we have is guest speakers. What we have is other appraisers talking about issues we talk about. We have a lot of federal policy in place as well. We talk about changes in the industry. So it's basically networking other appraisers so they're in line and they have, because usually it's not like appraisers are not like realtors where we have an office. Some of us have an office of 100, 200 people, right? You're in a bubble by yourself.
Right.
Right. And sometimes, you know, technology has changed. We're talking about the use of, you know, AVMs and all this AI stuff that's happening. All of this impacts you, impacts us, impacts real estate. So we have a special like speakers in regards to AI and how it's affecting the industry. And it's being able to give those messages to the appraisers that's in the room or for the members of the committee that's in the room so they can actually give that information out. And how can we make changes that's positive? How can we have better relationships with realtors? Because they feel exactly the same that most appraisers do is feels that, you know, realtors are just there. They just open doors, whatever. And I could tell you the opposite because I actually show my properties. I actually attend inspections. I actually, you know, photos, everything.
So I will say, yeah, there's definitely the perception from each side, appraisers viewing agents and agents viewing appraisers. There's a lot of assumptions on what we both do, which is very humorous because mm-hmm. we feel the same way about each other sometimes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what's one thing that you wish more appraisers understood about agents and how they work and not just door openers? So like.
Well, it depends, right? Because every time I have an appraisal, I come with my comparables. I come with like floor plans. I come with everything possible. And it's not to say, hey, this is, you know, I would like the opportunity to say, hey, finish what you're doing, because everyone has a different style. You walk in, you meet someone, if someone doesn't want it, or most people now are very open. So I think communicating is really important, right? I understand you have to, like, I know you're not supposed to be calling me appraiser because it is a third party, and people have to understand what you're doing is making sure that the value is there. But being able to come here and say, hey, this is the evidence. You know, I just didn't price it this way. I did a pre-inspection appraisal. I have all the comps, you know, the area. And I guess what it is too, because people sell things sometimes that they don't know anything about the area. They just take a listing, right? Yeah. And most appraisers, I mean, you can get that information. You don't have to know the area specifically, but you need to know enough about it, right? Understanding those things and being able to work together and be allies in part of the transaction to make it easy process as possible. It's not an easy process, but we have to work on communication and building and bridging that gap and understanding and respecting each other, what they do.
I agree. Communication is huge. That's very good when the appraiser talks to the agent and let them know, like, hey, this is what I'm going to do. You know, this is the process here. Or even if there's a buyer there that doesn't understand the process, it's an like, you can explain the process. You can still talk to a buyer. You can still talk to an agent and just explain things. You don't need to divulge your value or whatever. You can just communicate and let them know the process, because a lot of appraisers are meeting new agents and this is the first appraiser that they've ever met. So if you're going in there, your head down, not even talking, you're doing a disservice to everybody. Like, you can be helping that agent understand the appraisal process. Like, hey, I'm just going to find sales in this one neighborhood because this is where potential buyers look. But I really like what you're over and above a lot of agents, which I tell them they have to bring a list of updates for the property, bring 3 to 5 closed sales, bring your survey, bring a contract if they need it. You have to do that stuff as even a listing agent, right, or a buyer's agent. You have to do that stuff.
Right. I make an Excel spreadsheet, and any repairs that has been substantial in the past 2 years, I ask for the receipts. I just don't want to see this is what you paid, or you made up a number for something. My job is to evidence that to you. Sure. Right. And I explain to them, okay, well, you paid $200,000 premium for your house because of the water lot. when you were buying from the builder. But guess what? The premium, you're probably going to get 50, you know, right. Because it's 10 years ago and sales have caught up. And if you get so much, depending if something was on a dry lot versus. So explaining that, the solar panel stuff, right?
Yeah.
So it's solar panels. You know, I was like, all right, if it's paid off in full, but guess what? Your insurance might drop you. You know, insurance quotes, all of those things are really important. But I think it's important for the realtor to bring that information to you because you cannot make a decision on something that you don't necessarily know that happened.
So do you see the appraiser and agent gap getting like better, like us communicating better, or do you think it's getting worse? Do you think we're in the right direction?
I mean, I see it from a different way because I'm with appraisers a lot more. I understand them a lot more. And I feel that they know when someone is BSing, right? I mean, they know when someone's BSing or they know when someone is actually prepared and giving them authentic and real information. So I feel that most people are very open to it. I would like the perceptions on both sides to be changed. And I'm working on that as an individual to be able to do that. Because you know what, we are the ones who represent the deal, right? So we need to work better together. Just like we work well with mortgage people, we have to have those relationships. Just like we do with inspectors. You know, we're not there to kill deals, but we have to understand how vital data is, right? And I look at it because everything in our MLS, it's a data feed that comes into something else. If people, like, I get really upset. I take it personally when I know something is sold, but they didn't update the days on the market.
Oh, I
or you
constantly
know something's under contract.
Yeah,
right.
I constantly do error check in that MLS.
Yes.
When something's closed,
yes.
I know it's closed. Yes. I'm like, hey, they need to close this out.
The triangle. The triangle,
I
right?
I do that.
But you have to, because people don't realize it affects days on market. Cool. It affects the inventory. It affects months that we have of inventory. It's really, it's not just
data
you
integrity.
With one transaction.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's data integrity. And that's important for everybody because, you know, if you don't
Absolutely.
Close out that listing, that sale may show that the market's appreciating or something, or the sales that they didn't close out. And it can be very important for that appraisal. So
absolutely.
You mentioned about making deals work and stuff, but that's, appraisers, you can, you know, work with agents and still maintain your independence. This is not influence.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call. Because real protection means showing up. Even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
This is just information.
Absolutely.
You're talking to a market expert in that neighborhood. Like, I don't work that neighborhood. Like, if you sell in your home neighborhood all the time, I'm up there 10 times a year. You're up there 1,000 times a year. I'm not. So mm-hmm. You're kind of like the expert in that neighborhood. And whatever information you can give to that appraiser, I wouldn't turn away. It's just information. It's not influence. It's just information. It's your job as the appraiser to filter out what you need to and come up with your opinion, you know, based on that information or supplemental information when you provide them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it should never be combative. It should always be pleasant. It should always be professional. And people should not be, because the amount of work and time that you put in is not just looking at the inspection. People don't realize that you prep for this before and then afterwards, and then you have a, you know, someone who is last minute and the lender is pressuring you also to send something out because your name and your license is stamped to that. Because when people ask me to see a house that I don't have a showing agreement on, I was like, I'm sorry, this is how I take care of my family. So integrity is extremely important in both, in all of our, everything that we all do.
All right, cool. So we're going to pause right here for our sponsor, and then we'll continue on with some more questions in a second.
Okay.
This episode is sponsored by the Appraisal Referral Network, a community built by appraisers for appraisers. Unlock new opportunities and earn more private work by leveraging peer-to-peer referrals. You'll also connect with nearby appraisers and access valuable lessons to expand your non-lender business. If you're ready to grow your income and reach new levels, head over to referappraisals.com and join the Appraisal Referral Network today. Hey, welcome back, Karen. So how can appraisers, you know, get more involved and make their voice heard at like a national level with NAR? How can they do that? Because half, because there's like 40, 50, maybe 80,000 appraisers in the country, and a lot of them are realtors, are members of the associations.
So, and there's also other other forums that you guys can join also that NAR appraisers have partnerships with as well. So I'm sure you guys have associations locally as well. Do you?
Yes, we not really, we have like local associations with the Appraisal Institute and then national associations as well. So yes.
Right. So the Appraisal Institute and NAR work hand in hand with information exchange as well, right? So that is filtering that information. So I think because NAR is so large, we have different forms of communication. Like we have the hub that NAR members and all members of committees communicate on too. So new rules, new regulations, any changes is also filtered that way as well. But we do have quite a few affiliations with other appraisal groups throughout the country in order to make sure we're all on the same page.
All right, cool. So from your perspective, what are you seeing in the current market? Are you seeing on your residential side and then commercial side with appraisals? Are you seeing a lot of gaps now? Are you with the value appraisers coming in at and the contract price? What are you seeing?
So I have not, knock wood, I have not had any gaps. I think it's a lot about, I predominantly list on the residential side and usually buy on the commercial side. So what I've been seeing is obviously the market is, and you explain people, hey people, welcome back to 2019, you know, 2019, here we are, right? It wasn't a bad year. explaining to them, listen, what your neighbor sold 3 years ago is not what's happening right now. We have a lot of stuff with rates. We had a lot of like last year I was doing like, I have a client's house on the market for 3 weeks and freaking out. And I was like, listen, your house is 1.6 something. And this is not, you're not going to get 50 people in your house. And if you do get 50 people, it's going to be unqualified people, right? With the new rules, et cetera, you know, hopefully more people are actually being pre-approved before they go out. But explaining to people that your pricing can't be from 2 years ago. You have to look at the comps. They've had 30, 40, 50% increase in values in the past 6, 7 years, which is an enormous amount.
Correct.
A healthy market is 4%, for a nice steady percent, right? So pricing is really, really important. And if you understand that and you look at the comps and you realize that last year we had a lot less inventory, and that's because of rates predominantly, because people were trapped in their houses and they couldn't leave because they have 2.75 and the house and what they were getting is 8%. This year rates have fallen, and explain to people, guess what? 6.75 in the grand scheme of things throughout history is a very good normal rate. So educating is really important in pricing and saying, hey, you know what, maybe I'll push the value by 2% if they want to on the listing, so they have room to negotiate, because everyone right now, I'm telling you, is walking in and they think it's given away, the market has crashed. And it, depending on who you speak to, the sellers are learning to understand that you have to price correctly. And honestly, it's still substantially more than what they would have sold if they sold in 2020, 2021. So price correctly and you're not having that issue. Have the support to justify it. Oh, you put in a pool, you did this, et cetera. Yes, you may get some more for it, but you're not going to get above it. You can't price above the market. You have to price with the market in order to do so.
In your market up there, those pool spa, built-in kitchens, mm-hmm. those are like mm-hmm. 200 grand. Very expensive to put those in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot was lost with appraisers, you know, under adjusting for a lot of that stuff, because the cost for that shot up dramatically. Even for pool remodels Absolutely. And stuff, it costs so much money. But regarding pricing, what's like 1, 2, 3, what are you doing for your pricing? How do you price something? Like, where are you? Are you going to the MLS? Are you doing RPR? Are you doing IMAP? Or
I actually do a combination of everything. I do, I do RPR. I look at IMAP. I look at comps, individual homes, especially if it's in this neighborhood, because I know the models, you know, the price per square foot, you know, the range. So I actually look at that, you know, the inventory, because you actually see them and show them. Unfortunately, the consumer looks at Zillow. So my job is to train my brain to look at what the consumer is looking at, because what they see is what they perceive to be correct. So you looked at those things. I also look at realtor.com. I look at Redfin. I look at CoreLogic values. And you do a compilation. And if I give a range and it's within all of their ranges, you make adjustments also. So sometimes on RPR, I know, well, we just did a pool, or we just changed a roof. So we know we'll give a little bit of adjustment, and it has to be recent as well, but you have to be able to justify it. So I actually do a combination of it. But as I said, I'm in a very specific area too. So you kind of learn the market, and depending on the year built, et cetera, and you understand it, right? So that's how I'm pricing.
So can you have the feel for it. So can you see a house that your potential listing and kind of know like automatically what it's going to be worth, like just based on the size, pool, water, you automatically know what it's worth without even looking at anything?
Yeah. And I always say to them, listen, I need to look at the inside, because sometimes it could be a big surprise or a big, you know, net letdown. But yeah, you know exactly, depending on what neighborhood, what section, whatever square foot, you know kind of where the range should be, right? Going in, and then you're just like, okay, well, this, like I had one yesterday, day before yesterday, and I walked in and I was like, well, this is the range, and this is where it should be, and this is why, and my job is to justify why. And they were like, all right, we like it, let's sign.
Yeah, because you don't want to waste your time taking an overpriced listing. Mm-hmm. It costs you time, money, your reputation, everything. It's not good.
Especially in a market where everybody's very nervous because of tariffs and because of changes and because of everything, you know, we had a lot of instability with elections and all of that too. So you have to keep that in mind as well. So people are very nervous, and, you know, some people are buying so they don't have to stay in their house, but then they get nervous because they have to carry two mortgages. And I said to them, listen, we're not in a 2 month market. We have 4 or 5 months of inventory. Yeah. And that's if the data is correct, right?
If you're lucky. Yeah. If you're lucky, it's 4 to 5 mm-hmm. months right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually pulled numbers, and last month to this month was 7 months. But when you looked at the amount of listings from last year at this time to the amount, we had a lot more because people were holding off listing, right? So you have to understand the entire market too, right? Yeah. To be able to, but I'm not taking a 3 month listing. I'm not even like, my listings are usually 9 months to a year.
Yeah. Regarding, you mentioned you've seen the inventory. That is very important from an appraiser. Like if you're printing out those 3 to 5 sales, I always ask the agent, like, have you been inside any of these sales? Because they can give firsthand knowledge. Like, hey, by the way, yeah, this sale was superior to mine. It had a nicer kitchen, or it was like, it smelled like dogs in there. You can get perspective if the agent brings sales, you can ask them if they've shown those homes, mm-hmm. which is really good data, because I'm not going inside those homes. I don't know. I'm relying on descriptions and pictures, which are the best possible pictures that the agent could supply and the best possible description. So everything's pie in the sky when you're reading those listings.
Right, right.
So I don't
right.
know the real information unless you call and talk or have somebody right. else.
Not only that, when an appraiser calls you, I gladly return a call. I'll pick up the call and say, yes, I actually sold this, and that there was nothing else happening. There was no credits. There was no, you know, because the information you put in, it affects value. You know, these people with trying to do furniture and that sort of thing. I was like, listen, that's not my job. You know, we sell real property. We do not sell, you know, inventory. That's a separate license that's required.
Right. Yeah, and appraisers don't value it. It's mm-hmm. everything submitted from that report that's personal anyways.
Absolutely.
All right, so what's the most frustrating appraisal that you had on a listing? Let's see the worst thing that happened.
Yeah, I had one. It was about a year ago. And I think it's the first one in like maybe 8 years that like missed the value by a significant amount. The guy just walked in. He was not nice. He had no personality. He was just like, so his square footage was off by like 650. Wow. So it was a house that's a resale. So first time resale, it was from the builder. It's a model that I lived in previously. And I had a pre-appraisal. And you know what? I very rarely ever have to, but I did. I did, and then came back, and we got exactly where we needed to be. I wasn't overpricing it or overvaluing it or anything like that, but he missed the square footage big time, and he just was not open to doing anything else. And it took a big fight to go to the lender and to have it thrown out and, you know, redone and that sort of thing. But I stuck with it because it was justified, and I had all the evidence. I had like 8 of the models that was sold within the past 6 months. And the square footage. I mean, sometimes on a builder, they might be a variation of 50, but not like 600 and something, right?
Exactly.
So,
So you fought the appraisal because he was an error. There was a total error with the square footage.
And he refused to. And I actually he refused to even like talk about it. He was just not nice and not professional at all. He was screaming, and I was not. He was screaming, and he was like, you know. So I just have his number saved as blacklisted appraiser.
Okay.
He ever calls me. And that's, But I mean, and that's one time.
That's interesting. So what do you do if he comes up on another one of your properties? How would you approach that? Because you need to, like, it's a fine line, I guess. I don't know how you approach
that. I mean, basically as long as he doesn't come out to see the property and say, hey, I had a conflict with this person in the past, and you let the lender know before you set the appointment. You can't set the appointment and then say, hey, you know what, because he did his job at that point, right? So if I have that number saved and I know the name, I'm going to say to this lender, can you ask your, I'm not asking him to choose who I want, choose somebody else except this person.
Because it's a conflict of interest.
Correct.
Interesting. I would agree with a conflict of interest. If you guys had a screaming match back and forth, how can he? Mm-hmm. He's going to be kind of trying to have it out for you. Even though he may not want to, but it's in the back of his head, like, hey, this agent pissed me off. I'm going to try and screw this deal.
No, he was just really, and I mean, it was emails that I sent, and I sent comps, and I sent appraisals, and I sent surveys, and I sent everything possible. Long explanation. It was never a screaming. I never said, and his language was poor. He was just very unprofessional. And, you know, that was the case. Yeah. And that's, you know what? And that's the same thing we have on the real estate side. One person gives all of us a bad reputation. One bad egg is what reason, you know, the people who do the wrong things are the ones sometimes that people don't want to take the time to go report, because guess what? It takes so much time, because it's a very competitive environment where people are fighting for the same amount of like areas for listings, etc. And it's easy if somebody was just out of jealousy wants to report someone. So the process is very, very difficult too. But sometimes people just don't go through the trouble because it's going to take them 2 weeks to get the information together to go through the process. So sometimes one bad egg causes issues. And this is why we have lawsuits and stuff, because someone is not being ethical or doing the right thing.
Got it. So one more question. If you could, wave your magic wand and fix the appraisal industry or fix appraisers, what would it be? What would be the best thing that you would do?
I actually feel, well, a lot of you guys work for big appraisal companies as well, but you don't see each other. So I think it would be better if you guys have like how we have realtor groups, etc., where you guys do masterminding, which I'm sure you do, but it's not necessarily local, right? And I think, because guess what, you guys know you have to stay in existence just like we do when it comes to AI, when it comes to lenders coming and saying, oh, we don't need an appraisal, we'll do an appraisal waivers. I mean, because guess what, we have to be relevant and we have to be important, make sure that we're a vital part of the transaction, right? Show the importance of being a person that's actually coming into this property, because everything, you know, you look at these pictures online and you think it's the most stunning house, and you walk in and you're like, oh my God, this thing needs a bulldozer. Right. But it's being able to stay on top of technology, which is always changing, and to be in sync with each other, to understand that, you know, you have a support system that makes things better, because if we're all on the same, you know, even playing field, everybody's good.
I agree with you. Connecting with local appraisers, that has helped me tremendously when I started reaching out to appraisers nearby me. It's not my competition. They, in fact, give me business and I give them business. It's a 100%. Great relationship. And you don't know, I don't know every, I don't, I'm not the best appraiser in my market. Newsflash to everybody listening. I'm definitely not the best appraiser in my market. So I can learn a lot from my peers who have found that situation before that I've never encountered, or I can learn a lot from my peers. They're not competition. So I agree with that. That's a good getting together locally and connecting is really big.
And we do that on the realtor side too. I have a lot of big producers and people who work in the area. And guess what? Everyone has their cup of tea, right? No one is going to be, you may like me, you may not like my style, or you may like somebody else, and that's fine. But we're never competition, because if we work together and we're professional, it's going to be great. And sometimes if I'm doing something that's out of the norm, I'm going to call one of my appraisal friends and say, hey, how would you handle this?
Right. All right. So any back at me, any, what do you think agents want to know from appraisers? Any questions for me? Anything agents should know? Like, you got anything for me?
I don't know. I mean, like if you were going out to do an appraisal, what do you expect? What it would be a perfect scenario to make your job as easy as possible? Bringing those information that you asked for, right?
Oh, so like scheduling, just easy on the schedule. Like ideal schedule is like, I don't think an agent should agree, like shouldn't automatically agree to my schedule, but being convenient to schedule is very important. Like it's always tough when people want to do like 4 o'clock or something, and that's terrible on my schedule or something like that. So the convenience of scheduling is very important. I like when the agent meets me, even if it's at a vacant house, like to talk to the agent and get to know them. But I know a lot of agents or a lot of appraisers who like a vacant home and nobody disturbed them. They can go walk around. But then at the appointment, I just like to, I'll announce myself when I get there and I'll explain what I'm doing, first, and then always explaining what to do, or what I'm doing, but I like to do the outside, then come inside, do my own thing. I'll make my own notes. And then at the end, we'll talk about everything. We can talk about the sales you choose, all the updates to make sure we're on the same page. But yeah, let me walk through the house. Don't bombard me with the comps immediately when you walk in, throwing a file in my face. It's like, let me breathe, do my thing. And then at the end we can talk, that's the ideal the scenario, and that's what I try and do, and it works. It works for me, at least. I don't know.
I mean, when I get a call from an appraiser, it was like that takes precedence over anything else, because I don't want to piss off an appraiser to begin with, to make things inconvenient for them, right? Cool. So, right, it's basically what it is. You have to be able to be flexible, right? I had one that chose a time and then calls back and says, oh, well, they want to do it on this time because they heard it was on Supra. And I said, yeah, it's on Supra, but I usually show the house. She seemed annoyed. So I said, can I have your email and I'll send you all my support? And then it worked out fine, because you have to see people's style, right? And see what works for them. She obviously didn't want me there and she wanted to change her time, even though she had a confirmed time, and no problem. But if you called me and you said tomorrow at 3 o'clock, guess what? I'm making myself present there tomorrow at 3 o'clock. I have my folder. I welcome you. I was like, let me know if you need anything. I stand in the kitchen, stay away from them, have my folder, and at the end, give it to them and say, if ever you need anything, you know, and I'll go over it if you want me to. If you don't want me to, it's in order and everything is actually labeled and tabbed to make things easier for you.
I like that. So appraisers, listen, accept what an agent has to offer. Even if you don't want to use it, just accept what the agent has to offer, and just accept it. Don't refuse their information, because it's information. That's all it is. It's not influence. It's just information. So with that, I'm going to wrap it up, but you're going to stay on for some bonus content for our elite members. I really appreciate you being a guest today and your insight into the agent and appraisal relationship. I really like it. And we could talk probably for another 2 hours about it. But we're going to end it here. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for joining us on the Brews and Appraisal Views podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode and found some value in it, which you can apply to your appraisal business. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe and leave a review. It really helps us reach more appraisers like you. For more tips and to connect with other appraisers, visit referappraisals.com. Until next time, keep brewing up success in your business, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com. You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at cinfin.com.